Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read.
What is up, Cryptoconomy crew? Welcome back to the show. I am Guy Swan, your host. And we are doing a nice little read today from Nick Szabo. I haven't hit one by him in quite some time. And this is a really great one posted in 1997, which just applies so well to the concepts that led to the creation of Bitcoin. This is one of those things that makes me think, like, someone who thought, like, in this perspective, this is one of the many pieces that makes me really consider that Szabo, I mean, obviously he had a critical role in the creation of Bitcoin just as influence for Satoshi, but it also leads me to believe that I've read so much by him that just makes me think the possibility of him being Satoshi is actually really high in my eyes. But obviously nobody knows. But I really, really liked this one, and I've been sitting on this for quite some time, waiting for a good opportunity to just kind of throw it in there. And this one is titled, it was published in 1997, and it is titled The God Protocols. I got a few announcements about changing the direction of the website and kind of a big decision that I think I made last night and that I think I'm going to stick to. So stick around after the read for that. I will hit that towards the end of the episode. But without further ado, let's go ahead and just jump right into this piece. Again, this is also on the NakamotoInstitute.org. Obviously, there are other places you can get this, unenumerated.blogspot.com. Nick Szabo's blog has this and tons of other work. But I'm just reading this because it's a little bit easier to digest. And Nakamoto Institute does such a great job of pulling all of this stuff together to make it easily accessible and with all kinds of other great works all in the same place. So again, this piece is by Nick Szabo, published in 1997, titled The God Protocols. Imagine the ideal protocol. It would have the most trustworthy third party imaginable, a deity who is on everybody's side. All the parties would send their inputs to God. God would reliably determine the results and return the outputs. God being the ultimate in confessional discretion, no party would learn anything more about the other party's inputs then they can learn from their own inputs and the output. Alas, in our temporal world, we deal with humans rather than deities. Yet, too often we are forced to treat people in a nearly theological manner because our infrastructure lacks the security needed to protect ourselves. Trusted third party. Network security theorists have recently solved this problem to an astonishing extent. They have developed protocols which create virtual machines between two or more parties. Multi-party secure computation allows any number of parties to share a computation, each learning only what can be inferred from their own inputs and the output of the computation. These virtual machines have the exciting property that each party's input is strongly confidential from the other parties. The program and the output are shared by the parties. For example, we could run a spreadsheet across the internet on this virtual computer. We would agree on a set of formulas and set up the virtual computer with these formulas. Each participant would have their own input cells, which remain blank on the other participants' computers. The participants share output cells. Each input our own private data into our input cells. Alice could only learn as much about the other participants' input cells as she could infer from her own inputs and the output cells. Mathematically trustworthy protocol. There are three major limitations. The first is that this virtual computer is very slow. In some cases, one arithmetic calculation per network message. Currently, it is at best practical only for small logic or arithmetic calculations used as an adjunct to or component of more efficient computations and protocols. The second is that there is a trade-off between privacy, fairness, and fault tolerance. Fairness means everybody learning the results in such a way that nobody can gain an advantage by learning it first. Fault tolerance can provide robustness against a minority, so that it takes a majority dropping out to halt the protocol. Or it can be non-robust but fail-stop, so that a single participant can terminate the protocol. Many papers have discussed the fraction of parties one must trust in order to be assured of learning the correct output. In traditional results, fairness and privacy could not both be achieved with a faulty majority. Recent papers have produced fair and private protocols even with faulty majorities. They trade robustness for privacy and fairness against any proportion of faulty parties. The advantage of this fail-stop approach is that one can usually find new partners and start over again, but one does not want to suffer irreversible losses, such as leaking information, being left holding the bag, or being convinced of an incorrect result. The third limitation is that, far from being omniscient or omnipotent, the protocol will accomplish only what is specified in the algorithm and the inputs. It won't be able to replace human-trusted third parties where those parties provide insight or knowledge that cannot be provided by a computer. With these caveats, any algorithmic intermediary can, in principle, be replaced by a trustworthy virtual computer. In practice, because of the three complications, we usually construct more limited protocols out of more efficient elements. Multi-party computation theory, by making possible privy virtual intermediation, has major implications, in theory, for all kinds of contractual relationships. This can be seen most clearly in the area of negotiations. A mechanism in economics is an abstract model of an institution which communicates with its participants via messages and whose rules can be specified algorithmically. These institutions can be auctions, exchanges, voting, and so on. They typically implement some kind of negotiation or decision-making process. Economists assume a trusted intermediary operates the mechanism. Here's a simple example of using this virtual computer for a mechanism. Alice can submit a bid price and Bob an ask price. Then their shared virtual program, which has one instruction, is A greater than B. The computer then returns true if Alice's bid is greater than Bob's offer. A slightly more sophisticated computer may then decide the settlement price according to a number of different algorithms. Alice's bid, Bob's ask, split the difference, etc. This implements the mechanism blind bargaining with no trusted intermediary. In principle, since any computable problem can be solved on this virtual computer, they are Turing complete, any computable economic mechanism can be implemented without a trusted intermediary. In practice, we face the three limitations discussed above. But the existence proof that any economic mechanism can be run without a trusted intermediary is very exciting. This means that, in principle, any contract which can be negotiated through a trusted third party, such as an auction or an exchange, can be negotiated directly. So in some abstract sense, the only remaining hard problems in smart contract negotiations are A, problems considered hard even with trusted intermediaries, for the standard economic reasons, and B, the task of algorithmically specifying the negotiating rules and output contract terms. This includes cases where an intermediary adds knowledge unavailable to the participants, such as a lawyer giving advice on how to draft a contract. In practice, many problems which can be solved in principle with multi-party computation will re-arise when we implement protocols in an efficient, practical manner. The God protocols give us a target to shoot for. Applying this kind of analysis to the performance phase of contracts is less straightforward. For starters, economic theories of the performance phase are not as well developed or simple as the mechanism theory of negotiations. Indeed, most economic theory simply assumes that all contracts can be perfectly and costlessly enforced. Some of the transaction cost literature has started to move beyond this assumption, but there are few compelling results or consensus theories in the area of techniques and costs of contract enforcement. Performance phase analysis with multi-party secure computer theory would seem to apply only to those contracts which can be performed inside the virtual computer. But the use of post-unforgeable auditing logs, combined with running auditing protocols inside the shared virtual computer, allows a wide variety of performances outside the virtual computer to at least be observed and verified by selected arbitrators, albeit not proactively self-enforced. The participants in this mutually confidential auditing protocol can verify that the books match the details of transactions stored in a previously committed transaction log, and that the numbers add up correctly. The participants can compute summary statistics on their confidentially shared transaction logs, including cross-checking of the logs against counterparties to a transaction, without revealing those logs. They only learn what can be inferred from the statistics, can't see the details of the transactions. Another intriguing possibility is that the virtual computer can keep state over long periods of time, allowing sophisticated forms of privy and self-enforcing secured credit. If mutually confidential auditing ever becomes practical, we will be able to gain high confidence in the factuality of counterparties' claims and reports without revealing, identifying, and other detailed information from the transactions underlying these reports. These would provide the basis for solid reputation systems and other trusted third-party systems that maintain integrity across time, communications, summarization, and preserve confidentiality for transaction participants. Knowing that mutually confidential auditing can be accomplished in principle will hopefully lead us to practical solutions to these important problems. All right, and that was our short but awesome The God Protocols by Nick Szabo and published on the NakamotoInstitute.org, and of course, Szabo's incredible blog, unenumerated.blogspot.com. So definitely go check those out, and I will link to both of those. But real fast, let's hit our sponsor, and then we will come right back. Now, this is such a fascinating, I absolutely love this piece, because it's really short, but it just talks about the idea of like what would be possible and how amazing it would be to have a protocol that did not have a trusted third party that you could write contracts and execute contracts on, which is exactly what Bitcoin is. That's what's is that like this problem was essentially solved, not in the entire range of like Turing completeness. Well, almost. There's like what can be built on top of this thing is not limited. The enforcement contract part of the contracts will require the limitation, will be embedded in the limitations of the underlying protocol of the Bitcoin script itself. But because we've got things like hash contracts, the what goes into those, if the transaction is locked with a hash of a contract, the scripts that go into the contract that is hashed do not have to meet any scripting requirements because the script itself is the hash lock. So in a sense, like on the higher layers of Bitcoin, you can get, and Lightning Network is a great example, you can issue assets, like you can implement all of these protocols and contractual and scripting things that are unique to specific things within the Lightning Network and other layers on top of Bitcoin. But the ultimate enforcement is based on Bitcoin script. I love towards the beginning, there's a quote that says, for example, we can run a spreadsheet across the internet on this virtual computer. We agree on a set of formulas and set up the virtual computer with these formulas. That's what Bitcoin is. It's a set of algorithms and rules that are being agreed upon and run on this giant shared computer, and it's running a ledger. But the incredible power of this ledger is that there's a scarce token attached to it. So going to his point on the idea of confidential auditing and creating an auditing protocol to verify like individual books or to secure an agreement in like a sharing of confidential auditing results, essentially, that's what Bitcoin accomplishes with a triple entry system, but does so by having a scarce token as part of this system and a consensus rule-based system for allocating and creating this token, like within that network, that protocol itself, is that you can actually attach the value, because he talks about in it towards the end the enforcement problem, the performance problem. Well, within the Bitcoin ecosystem, within the Bitcoin, the coin itself, that limitation only applies to any assets that are outside of the network. But we actually have an asset that's inside the network, and it's the incentive token for keeping the network up and running, for building an infrastructure for that network, and a set of rules to agree on the state of that ledger. So you've got a perfect auditing system. You've got that triple entry system where the public is enforcing it and being paid to secure it with this scarce token that actually can enforce the performance of the contract as long as it's being used with Bitcoin. It obviously cannot enforce performance out in the real world, but it does allow a self-enforcement option because the value tied to the agreement is actually locked inside the contract. This is what allows Lightning to work. Lightning is a contract that creates a self-enforcement mechanism. It is between you and the other node, and you don't need any third parties in that because the contract is for allowing the movement and exchange of funds across a second layer network, and it does not need, as long as you can, as long as you're willing to trade the time it takes to enforce the contract, all the value is in Bitcoin, which is locked in the contract. It is absolutely impossible to break down this agreement after its first execution without following one of the paths within the agreement. So you can set yourself up an insurance contract, which is what the revoking of previous states of the Lightning Channel are. You can set yourself up a time window to enforce it so that, because you know you're not always going to be there immediately, and you want to give yourself a fail-safe in case something goes wrong, in case your computer goes down or you're away from the internet for some period of time, et cetera, et cetera. You've instilled the agreements to this contract to make something else possible, and you've entirely created a self-enforcement system. This is exactly what he's talking about in this. It's a provable auditing system. You can capture the value within the protocol itself. It is its own network. It's its own economy. And you can create a set of algorithms and instructions that are enforced by the protocol. And there is no third party to trust in its execution. It is the lawyer in the contract. It is the court in its execution. And it creates exactly that kind of thing that he says, that Szabo says in this thing, that hopefully that there is something that can be accomplished in this, that maybe we can touch on this one day in the future. But that's exactly what we have. That's what's been created with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the God protocol. And it's the beginning of something just utterly massive. I think it's obvious, and you know, anybody who's been listening to this show for a long time, it could not be more clear that Bitcoin is going to change the world. But this is just a really interesting way to think about it. Like, this is the destruction of intermediaries all across the board, and third parties. Right now, it's being applied to money, the most critical of all the problems to solve right now, the most foundational of everything else, because all other contracts, without money being solved, all other contracts remain insecure, or at least remain dependent upon the security of money. Money is the foundational tool that all the other contracts are enforced with. You know, when you enforce with a performance in, you're enforcing a performance in any contract, half of it is money. You know, like money is the exchange given. So if the money isn't secure, or if you can't secure the money as part of the contract, well, the contract is only as secure as the money that's being used to settle it. And in that way, that's why I think of Bitcoin as an internet, is because it's just money to begin with. It just solved the problem of a independent and censorship resistant money in which contracts can be written on. And Lightning is the first of what I think is going to be thousands, millions, probably an infinite number of examples of ways of using these contracts to create self-enforced, private, mutually assured contracts and remove the idea of trusted third parties and intermediaries and replace them with these God protocols that allow us to arrange and organize society in a safe and socially scalable manner. Even when we disagree on so many things, even when we have so many different perspectives, different religions, and different values, that we can use these intermediary protocols and these unbiased, just protocols by agreeing on the rules of the system and participating in the enforcement of those rules, we can write any contract. It can lead to, it can facilitate cooperation and trade and economic growth on just an unbelievable scale. All the limitations that keep things from growing to a certain extent that lead to the limitations or the vulnerabilities that lead to corruption, that lead to the massive imbalances that we have with governments and economic policies, all this attempt at treating other people as gods and falling to the completely inevitable corruption of the power that is given to any one individual in these systems, or any set of individual in these systems, might actually be possible to solve. And that's what we're looking at. So I just thought this was a really, really amazing piece. Really short episode for today. But I've always wanted to hit this piece and thought this would be a good time to throw it in there. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Again, that was Nick Szabo's piece, The God Protocols, and it was published on the NakamotoInstitute.org. And I'll provide links to all of that stuff so you can check it out. And of course, follow the Nakamoto Institute and Nick Szabo on Twitter if you haven't. Because if you haven't yet, you fail, and you don't want to fail. So do that. Follow those guys. All right, now a quick announcement regarding the website. Thank you guys for everyone who gave me feedback on the new landing page that I've been working on. But I think I'm going to have a massive cut down on what I'm doing with the website, because it is just an incredible time suck, and I feel like I'm not getting anything out of it. It just doesn't need to be. Like, I really thought I was going to find a simple solution to, like, you know, maybe having some automatic posting of, like, the details for each episode and to just make it clean and easily searchable. But I don't even use it to search for stuff at all. I still just go to my anchor page and do an Apple, like, a Command F and, you know, search on the page for the article specifically that I'm looking for. And nobody uses the website, and I'm constantly behind on it. It just takes an enormous amount of time, and it always makes me feel guilty when I'm trying to work on the other content I'm producing when I know that the website doesn't even have the content I've already got out. I feel like, oh, I'll just catch up on the website real quick. and it never happens. I just can't, like, it's a full-time job managing that website, and I cannot believe, I really thought there were going to be simple solutions to this. It didn't seem like a tall order of what I was looking for. And if anybody has any assistance that, like, or insight that they can provide into making something like that work with the Divi Builder, which is what I'm using, I would really, really appreciate it. You know, like, if you think you've got a magic wand that can make that happen. But basically, I'm done spending time on it. I feel like it's been a huge waste, and I've missed the opportunity for a lot of content that should already be done. Like, there's so many projects that I should have finished, and the only thing that I have to show for it is something I'm really unhappy about, which is the current state of the website. So I think I'm going to bail on it. I will still have a website, but it will not be, I'm not going to be posting any episodes on it. So not until I can actually just hire somebody to do it full time and manage it for me so that I don't have to worry about it. But that's definitely not happening yet. So, we will see going forward what happens, but, I'm going to remove all of that currently, and the website will be a much simpler, cleaner way of just kind of getting in contact with me and managing things like my Ask Guy episodes that I'm doing now, and then also for fun little things like the Crypto Holiday Calendar and Crypto Economy Holiday Calendar and the Bitcoin Survivors book list. Like, all that stuff will stay up there, but it's just going to be a much more, I'm just doing some specific thing on the website, and it will no longer be a way to get to search. I'm giving up on the idea of categorizing and doing all this work to make the episodes to organize them, because the cost versus reward in that just isn't there. With that, anybody wants to shoot me a message or has some clever idea to save that whole part of the website, I'd love to still entertain it. But at this point, I just think it's a waste of time to go any further with that. But the really good news on that is that now I just get to use it to build and do the really fun stuff I want to do without the giant maintenance costs of keeping it up. So I can focus on, like, you know, I got a like swag for the show and stuff. I think I got a really fun Crypto Economy logo that I got on a shirt, and I've had a number of people ask me about it. And I want to get all that stuff sorted out, and I've been, all the other things, just posting on the website has taken all my time away from doing the fun things that I actually wanted the website to be for. With that, that was just the announcement there that the direction of the website is going to change a lot, but don't worry, the fun things like the Survivor's Book list, I'm actually going to have a lot more fun things now on the website because I'm not focused so much on the make sure every single article I ever read has an elaborate show notes page and all this stuff with it, because all that's right there in Anchor. Like, that's the easiest and fastest place to get it all. And, you know, people don't listen to podcasts in a web browser. They listen to it on a podcast app. So it just seemed like a completely redundant thing. And with that, I think that's all I wanted to talk about. Thank you guys for listening. I am Guy Swan, your host, and you're listening to the Crypto Economy Podcast. And we are going to have a ton of fun stuff on the horizon. And hopefully now, fingers crossed, I'm finally going to be able to dedicate a lot more time to the content, to the videos I've been wanting to work on, to fun stuff on the website as opposed to just redundant episode posting and getting the newsletter up and running. I've got a lot of fun ideas with that one, and getting the Crypto Economy crew together. Lots of stuff happening, and I hope this decision will help me get to a conclusion and get to an actual execution for some of these things that I've been working on in the background. So thank you guys so much for listening. Stick with me, subscribe to the show, and follow me on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at TheCryptoEconomy. I'm Guy Swan, obviously. And subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. I'll catch you guys on the next show. And until then, take it easy, guys.